This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Our third guest on today's show is artist Valerie Ellis. Here she is chatting with Jackie Mitchell.
Hello there, Valerie.
Hello, Jackie.
Thanks very much for joining us.
So
before we discuss your work as an artist, I'd be very interested to hear a bit about your background, because I understand your artistic talent was recognised from a very early age, wasn't it, while you were at school?
Yes, look, I think a lot of people have a sort of arty quality, don't they, at school. Most people enjoy painting and drawing as a child. But I suppose I had a particular talent, and when I did my O-level art exams, I wasn't paying a lot of attention, and I turned up and did the drawing, the painting that we were supposed to do, and I went to leave, and the art teacher said, "Oh, where's your portfolio?" And I said, "Oh, what portfolio?" And she said, "The portfolio you're supposed to have been making all year long." And I hadn't really been doing that. And so for the rest of the afternoon, I made a portfolio and I submitted that as my art exam. And in my results, I was given the highest mark for art in the country that year.
Wow, how exciting.
So I think, yes, it was a good indicator of the some kind of natural talent and capacity. Despite my lack of organisational skills as a young adult.
And then, of course, you were going to go to the Epsom School of Art, but instead you emigrated to Australia, where you stayed 20 years. Why was that?
Well, I had a hard childhood. I didn't have a happy childhood, and I wasn't aware of being talented with art. It when I look back now, I'm struck by it. And if someone told me this was their experience at school, that they got away with doing a year's worth of work in one day and got, you know, a great mark, I would say, well, that's clearly a talent, whether it's maths or art or whatever. But because I was having a hard time as a child, I really wasn't paying attention to that kind of thing. I had sort of emotional things to deal with. And a teacher suggested I went to art college at Epsom and study fashion, which fundamentally, I don't have a particular interest in, really, but I got in because of the talent. And then I emigrated to Australia because I had relatives there, and this was really part of my own personal development process of trying to find a happier life for myself. So I abandoned life here and went to Australia.
And
at the beginning of...
How old?
I was 17, 18 at that point.
Wow, that was a brave move.
And people say that, but I think there's some of that in there, but really it was about being emotionally independent. As I say, my childhood was a very unhappy one, and I had learned to be very independent to the extent of almost being isolated. And the decision to go to Australia was really a reflection of the disconnection I had from any family over here. So I went to Australia really very subconsciously thinking maybe I'll be happier there. So a certain amount of bravery, but I think a certain amount of kind of internal search and hunt for a happier life was really what was
motivating. Did you find the happier life in Australia?
I think it was one of accidentally the best things I've ever done.
Oh, that's great. And while you were there, you became a psychotherapist.
So, well, exactly, and it's a little bit, you know, eye-rollingly obvious that's kind of the next move, or what people sometimes do. I had a very kind person who was very loving towards me, and they gave me a book called The Road Less Travelled, which I've often said, if I could give one gift to everyone on the planet, it would be a copy of that book, The Road Less Travelled. And it really opened my eyes to why I was unhappy, what the causes were, and what I could do about it. And it was really about psychology. And so I fell in love, as converts often do, with the thing that I felt saved me from my unhappiness, which was psychology. I read the book, I tried to improve myself, I went to university to study psychology because I really believed that it would be the key to escaping the unhappiness and becoming a happier, more productive, successful person. And it has been. So going to Australia meant I encountered that person, that book, the opportunity to go to university, and a bigger perspective on life in general. I think that's really what it gave me. It opened my eyes to, wow, there's a big life out there, and there's I need to interface with that. I need to face it and do something with it.
Sure. And of course, you kept up your art all this time, didn't you?
Yes, because it is, I think, if you do have a natural inclination, a talent, then it stays there in the background, whatever you have a passion for. So I was always drawing or painting. I designed houses. I did renovations for profit. I did interior design for a while. So there was always an artistic bent to what I was doing. And
how did the psychotherapy help your art?
I think it fundamentally what it did was help me be less unhappy, so that I could then pursue something more meaningful. I mean, if any of your listeners are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and if they're not, I would highly recommend researching it. Maslow's hierarchy of needs explains that we really need to get the fundamentals in place first. A sense of security is fundamentally important. And once we have that sense of security for ourselves, and then a sense of connection to others, we can pursue the more abstract, self-fulfilling aspect of our lives. And for me, that would be art. So psychology helped improve me and my life. And so it freed me up at that point then to go, oh, what is the most self-fulfilling thing I can do next? Oh, fulfill my potential as an artist is what happens next. So that's the first way it does it. And then for me, I'm always looking for a meaning in things. That's what psychology does. It identifies the fact that there's always a meaning, there's always a motivation, there's always a purpose behind what we do. And in my art, it's about expressing meaning and purpose as well.
Okay. And today, of course, you're a full-time artist. And I looked at your website, very impressive abstracts, figures and drawings. And I was so intrigued by the names that you give your paintings. So you've got things like The Hound of the Baskervilles, She Should Have Been a Squirrel. How do you come up with the names for your paintings?
Sometimes it's planned. So sometimes I have an idea and it's clear to me what painting would express it. On other occasions, it is a case of while I'm painting or drawing, a meaning becomes apparent. It starts to reflect something I've been mulling over or a mood at the moment. And so the words really emerge from the process of making the painting.
Right. And also, what made you choose oils rather than watercolor or acrylic?
I'm a fairly traditional person, so I love old-fashioned antique-y things. If I had a beautiful house, it would be a big old country house full of antiques. So my personal style is old-fashioned, and so oil paint is the most classical old-fashioned medium for painting. It also provides you with a lot of flexibility. Anybody who's used oil paint versus acrylic knows that you have the opportunity with oil paint to work on a painting for hours and days and weeks. And it gives you the chance to explore something in a lot of depth and make it the best expression you can. So I like oil paint because it gives you a longer opportunity to relate to what you're creating rather than acrylics, which practically speaking dry in minutes, no more than an hour. So there's not a lot of opportunity for sort of reflecting and reworking. In my experience with acrylics, that's the two reasons I prefer oil.
Okay. And where do you get your inspiration from for paintings?
A lot of it is other art. So I'm very interested in art history. I spend a lot of time learning about art history, watching interviews with other artists, reading about other artists. And so for me, my work is an extension of and a part of all of art history. So it tends to be other artwork that then provokes an idea that I then try to express, versus for other people, you know, they'll see a view and they want to capture or reproduce the view. That's not typically what motivates me. What motivates me, as I say, is extending on the theory and history of art as it is today.
Right. And people must commission you for portraits as well, and other paintings, I guess.
Oh, sometimes, yes. So the most simple thing is a drawing. So people can have just a pencil drawing, which is very classical and lovely and often quite flattering. I have been doing pastel portraits, and people who are familiar with pastels will realize they have a very soft, romantic quality. So they're a great medium for doing very flattering portraits, and you can get a lot of color in. And then I do oil paintings, which is obviously a much more serious commitment, but a much more classical portrait commission, the kind of thing, you know, Henry VIII would have done, or Queen Elizabeth now does, and very important people get their portrait painted in oils to go over the fireplace.
Oh, sounds wonderful. And out of the abstracts, figures and drawings, which do you prefer doing?
At the moment, I'm liking two things. I'm really enjoying doing pastel portraits. I like doing portraits because it really tests your skills. One of my concerns as a person and as an artist is that I'm not doing something because it's easy. I want to do the best that I can do. And portraits are widely recognized as the most challenging subject for art. It's the most difficult thing to accomplish, a likeness in a portrait. So I do portraits to keep testing myself on my skills and keep improving my eye, so to speak, and to make sure I'm not doing other things because I can't draw or paint well. I'm doing them because I want to. So I do pastel portraits a lot at the moment to test my skill, to keep it high. And then I'm really enjoying doing abstracts as a psychological exploration of art, of line, color, of taste, style, and composition. So I do both of those, and they look quite different, but one really informs the other.
Well, that sounds very interesting. And also, I saw that you run art classes. I assume they are virtual at the moment.
I'm not doing them at all online. There are thousands of art classes online, literally thousands, possibly tens of thousands online already. And I don't have the motivation to compete with very well-funded other artists online doing art classes. That's fine. Also, in my experience, and I'm sure people who've done online classes versus in-person classes in any field can attest to the idea that, yes, online class, great, yes, good, can learn some things, but there's nothing quite like things being in person. And having done art classes in person before,
of course, yes,
get a really personal experience. They get a much richer experience of learning, and I'm able to literally stand next to the person, have my hand where their hand is, and say, look, just move the pencil this way and you'll get the result you want. And they do that, and it's miraculous. They can paint or draw the thing they want to paint or draw. And so having a very personal touch, so to speak, really, I think, is the difference between, say, driving a car and walking. Yes, you can get to both places, but I'd rather get there in a car than walk. So I'm waiting until I can do art classes in person again to provide people with a much richer, more personalized experience that I think has more value for people.
Of course, yes. Well, hopefully that won't be too long.
Yeah, I hope so.
So what else have you got planned then? Have you got any exhibitions maybe for next year?
The next thing I'm planning is actually reaching out to some galleries in London to get representation for the abstracts in particular. So the portraits, those are commissions that come as they do by word of mouth. But the abstract paintings, I think they need to be put in front of a potential collector. So the next thing I'll be doing, as I say, is contacting art galleries in London to try to get representation in a gallery in London.
Oh, well, that's very exciting. Wish you every success with that. But in the meantime, of course, people can view your paintings on your website, and it's very, very good. And you can see the colours and everything. It's fantastic. How long does it actually take you to do a painting?
I don't want to bail and do the whole piece of string response. So I'll give you a more full explanation. If I was doing a pastel portrait, for example, one of the things I'm focusing on at the moment, I might spend a day doing sketches of the face, of the person's face, and then a second day sketching an underdrawing for the portrait, and then doing the pastel portrait on top of that underdrawing. So 2 days,
yes,
to do a pastel portrait.
Okay, well, I'm awfully sorry, we've run out of time. Sorry about that. Perhaps you can give us your website details so people can get further information.
Absolutely, it's veryvalerieellis.com. Very simple.
Thank you very much, Valerie.
You're welcome.
So that was Valerie Ellis, artist.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.